This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good afternoon and welcome to Health and Living. It's our Doctor in the House series. Dr. George Lee, consultant urologist in the studio. It's a Friday afternoon. Mm-hmm. It's not raining.
So, and Mira's looking happy.
Yes, very, because tomorrow, you know, we're all hyped up and all ready for tomorrow's event, our H&L, Health and Living Grey Matters event on healthy aging. So that's going to start first thing in the morning.
Appropriate for myself. After 50 years old, you know, I'm heading that direction. So I'm coming to listen to all the panelists and tell me more. I need to know.
You know, I everyone thinks that it's got to be for the older person.
Yeah.
But you know, really, George, we're all aging from the time we're born, right?
Of course.
And we know
it's all relative.
It is relative. And we all know today how well you age. The most important, you know, period of your life, I feel, based on, you know, the shows that I've done and the research or reading that I've done, is in midlife.
Mm-hmm.
And that's when most of us neglect ourselves.
Yes.
Because we have the children to look after, we've got the parents, we've got work, career, all of that, you know, moving at such super speed that we forget our health. And how we age, you know, is determined by that time of your life.
I totally agree with you. A good friend of mine tells me.
50 might be a bit late.
A bit late. You know, the 5 series is all gone. It should be the 3 series that actually needed some attention. A good friend of mine told me this, and I really thought it was actually quite appropriate. He said, before 40, you abuse your body. After 40, your body will abuse you.
Yeah.
Right. Okay. So, you know, before you start abusing your body, come to the show tomorrow and then we'll get some tips about not to abuse your body, age beautifully. And for those of you who are a bit late, like myself, into 5 series already, come to the show tomorrow. Right. Okay. And then you know some tips how to reverse the aging. What do you think about age reversal?
In some situations you can, in some you can't. Some of it is lost time. Simple things we forget about and don't think about and don't take seriously is sleep.
Yes.
And how that impacts us in older age.
Yeah, that's right.
You know, so much to talk about.
Exactly.
Join us tomorrow.
You have to join us tomorrow, right? It's like, you know, 1 week sometimes just passed by so quickly. This week, suddenly, Britain has a new Prime Minister who's been here before on BFM.
Yes, he has. He has been here on BFM.
So you guys are just like, you know, the rock stars of radio stations.
Tomorrow's show is at Vertical at Nexus in Barnes.
Is he our special guest tomorrow?
No, he's not.
All right. Okay.
That's got to do with psychology and, you know, all those sort of, you know, analysis. We'll do that on
another day.
Yeah, I'd love to do it for Trump as well. you know, dementia.
We will just get that snippet and say, I will love to do it with Trumps as well.
Yes.
I think that is just, all didn't sound so right.
Oh, come on, George. Okay, so today's show is about World Hepatitis Day. It's this Sunday, the 28th of July, and we're discussing hepatitis today. Now, on the WHO level this year, they're calling for all countries to invest in eliminating hepatitis. And we know we've got hepatitis A, B, and C. B, we have it's part of the National Immunization Program where everyone is vaccinated for hepatitis B. Huge developments as far as hepatitis C is concerned in this country. We've done groundbreaking work in terms of using a voluntary license to produce generic.
A bit controversial, but we were the first country.
Yes, we are the first country. Yeah. And controversial, yes, I understand, big picture, but you know what? The patient. Totally.
It's obviously focusing on the patient, and that's how we should do it.
That's right.
Okay.
So cost of it has come down as a result of that initiative. So in the studio with us to help us understand, go through some of these initiatives, Dr. Haniza Omar. She's a consultant gastroenterologist and hepatologist from Hospital Selayang. Welcome to the show, Dr. Haniza. How are you today?
Good. Thank you, Mira, and thank you, Doctor, for inviting me here today.
Anytime. Tell us a little bit more about hepatitis, Dr. Haniza. I mean, what are you seeing in Hospital Selayang and on a countrywide scale, how bad is hepatitis in this country?
So hepatitis just means inflammation of the liver. So it's a Greek word, actually. Liver inflammation can be caused by many things.
Mm-hmm.
The most common that we see in Asia Pacific will be virus hepatitis.
Okay.
And B and C were the most prominent ones because these are the ones that can cause liver cirrhosis, liver cancer, and liver failure.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, other causes of hepatitis can be due to other things like alcohol, toxins, autoimmune diseases, and so forth. So in most hospitals, I would say the greatest burden, the great bulk of our patients would be viral hepatitis B and C.
B and C. Okay.
Is it because it's more the other ones, like for example, medicine, alcohol induced, can be more transient, and then viral hepatitis is a chronic disease?
Well, they can all become chronic, actually, even alcohol and even other diseases.
The more you consume, the more destruction.
The more destruction it can be. But the more that we see our population, Asia-Pacific, mainly it's viral hepatitis B and C.
Mm-hmm. Okay. You know, if you have a question for us on hepatitis, just give us a call. The number's 7733 2900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899, or tweet us at BFM Radio. Dr. Haniza, maybe you want to kickstart with hepatitis B first, because, you know, it was part of the National Immunization What year was that?
That was back in 1992.
Okay, mm-hmm. And how well have we done in terms of containing hepatitis B?
So the vaccination program, Ministry of Health vaccination program started in 1992. Mm-hmm. So all infants, regardless of whether their mothers have hepatitis B or otherwise, would get this vaccination program. It's 3 injections at birth, 1 month later and 6 months later. Mm-hmm. And with the health facts that we have, the hepatitis B is one of the top 3 vaccine preventable disease. Mm-hmm. I think if you covered all 3 vaccination, you should be well covered around 97% of the time. So that's pretty good, actually.
Okay. And so where are we today compared to 1992? Have we done research to see how far we've come?
Well, there is a study, I think I would have said. And if you actually look at the prevalence of hepatitis B in this cohorts that are born after 1992, mm-hmm. and those before, you can see a drastic reduction mm-hmm. in the number of patients who are around 20 to 30 years old or even less than that to have hepatitis B compared to the ones in the past.
Yeah.
The age groups are mainly above 30, 40s and so forth.
Hepatitis B, it's a little bit close to my heart. My father died of hepatoma. Oh, he was hepatitis B carrier. Mm-hmm. And my grandmother was hepatitis B carrier. So I always... The reason why I say it's very close to my heart is because obviously we see this program in 1992, which had the intention to eliminate the carrier status. How many of our population currently are still carriers, you know, from the last generation? And what sort of coverage have we achieved with the hepatitis B vaccinations?
As I was saying, the coverage is around 97% from those days. So the urge is for people to be aware of it, mm-hmm. To be able to come for screening program or get themselves screened if they have a family history of hepatitis B, mm-hmm. and continue to have follow-up with a doctor.
Right.
And they can advise whether these people need to be treated or not.
Yeah.
So not all of the carriers would need to be treated, okay. actually.
Yeah. So you know, I'm... just speaking on kind of obviously a personal basis, when my dad was made aware that he was a carrier, and it was always it's just a mild condition, doesn't really need to do anything, just a bit of regular checkup will be fine. And when it hit him quite severely. Essentially, over a 6-month period, he became having ascites, the tumor was everywhere. Mm. So, you know, what sort of advice would you give patients who are carriers, which they're quite prevalent in Asia-Pacific region, right?
Right. So most of them, 80% of them will be asymptomatic, as I said. So they do not check and they feel well and they say, I don't need to go to the hospital. They queue for half a day to see the doctor for 10 minutes. Mm-hmm. And eventually the doctor says there's nothing much that we can do. So what we do is actually when they come, we monitor their blood tests, their DNA levels, their ultrasound, and try to pick them early, any evidence of inflammation, mm-hmm. and try and treat them. Mm-hmm. So what we're trying to do is halt the progression of a carrier, which has progressed to liver fibrosis, cirrhosis, and so forth.
It doesn't mean that if you're a carrier, you will get...
Not necessarily.
And what sort of percentage of carriers will eventually develop into aggressive cancer?
Well, 10% will get into cirrhosis, and a further 10% from that will get into liver cancer.
Right. So effectively about 1% of general populations.
True. Yeah, that's correct.
And obviously, he passed away probably about 15 years ago, mm-hmm. and I understand a huge amount of breakthroughs that has come through about treatment of hepatitis B or hepatoma, right?
Yes.
I mean, would you like to share with the listeners out there a little bit?
So hepatitis virus was just found in 1965, by Professor Baruch Bloomberg. So that's why World Hepatitis Day was picked on the day of his birthday.
Ah.
And the vaccination came into the picture back, I think this founded in 1967.
Mm-hmm.
So in those early years, you were right that perhaps there were not much treatment available.
Right.
So in the early 1990s, they were using interferon. This is the injection form of treatment, an immunomodulator that they used for a duration of 6 to 12 months
mm-hmm.
and see they're not too pleasant. People don't like it. They got all those side effects of this flu-like symptoms and feverish and so forth. Oral tablets came into the picture around 1998 onwards.
Mm-hmm.
So that was the days of lamivudines. And it has evolved further now to be more potent nucleoside analogues such as tenofovir, entecavir,
mm-hmm.
and tenofovir alafenamide as well, where you would see these strong medications help to halt the virus in your body and hence hope to stop the progression of liver disease.
Almost to the extent of cure, really, isn't it? Almost?
Almost. We haven't got that cure bit yet
yeah.
because this virus actually incorporates into your genome nucleus in the yeah. cccDNA. It's a bit more molecular levels. So we aren't able to target at that area per se yet.
Yeah.
So unlike this hepatitis C where there is a cure, hepatitis B, we're still controlling the virus, but there are many more researchers coming into the picture.
Meera, don't you think it's a bit ironic that, you know, hepatitis C has no vaccine, but, you know, we're achieving
yes.
some degree
yes.
of cure. And then on the other hand, hepatitis B, which has vaccine, we achieve 97% coverage, and then but we're still not looking at cure.
Cure.
You know, to be honest with you, I think a lot of listeners out there, because hepatitis B is very prevalent in Malaysia, right?
Yes.
Quite interested in calling in, and then, you know, you might give advice. But what is your view about one day eliminating hepatitis B altogether?
We hope to see that in the future. As I said, there are lots of research being done now about the toll-like receptors, the nucleoside enzymes as well being targeted at molecular levels and nucleus level.
Mm.
So in future, we hope that we can eliminate hepatitis B, get rid of the hepatitis B surface antigen altogether. And we hope by doing that, we can also stop this viral replication and stop the medication altogether at one day.
I'm just curious, George. I mean, if there is an effective vaccine for hepatitis B, why do we need to still look for a cure?
Right, okay. This is what I was a little bit, in a way, disappointed in some way that there are still a large demographic of our populations, mm-hmm. older generations, before 1992 are still positive. And then also, we're still not achieving...
Not older generation, that includes both of us, George.
Yeah, well, older.
Yes, in 1992, how old were you?
How old was I?
Barely a baby.
I was more than baby. I was I went to university in 95, so...
Yes.
I was second year medical school students already at that time, right? Yeah. But we were all vaccinated. Right? I mean, second, we're all vaccinated hepatitis B.
It was not part of the national immunization program.
No, I didn't think so, no.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, you're probably before that.
But before the medical
Well
before that.
Yeah, yeah, so we were, it was mandatory for us as a healthcare provider.
Professionals, yes.
Yeah.
So for non-healthcare professionals, it's optional. You need to go and get yourself vaccinated in a private clinic or in that sort of setting.
If you're at risk, if thing at risk, or you're staying with someone with hepatitis B, then it's advisable for you to get vaccinated as well.
That's why Meera came up with a fantastic question. If there is a vaccine, you know, why do we need antiviral to eliminate it? Because eventually we're looking at complete elimination just by herd immunity and complete vaccination.
True, but that's a little...
You will never, I suppose, cover 100%
of the population. 3% of population that we're missing. And those
is
babies...
Is it because people opt out? Can they opt out of the national immunization program?
Well, they cannot not bring their infants to the hospitals to get vaccinated. There's still a few people who's against vaccination as well.
Mm-hmm.
Sadly.
And we also forget the small groups of people who cannot be vaccinated, right? Babies who cannot be vaccinated because they have other health issues. What about nomads? You know, the very poor people who move around, who are unable to access, you know, health clinics it's to true. Come and get themselves vaccinated. So, us not vaccinating is doing a disservice to that group of people.
It is true because, and one thing I just want to say on a personal basis. Hepatitis B, although it's 10% of hepatitis B will eventually lead to cirrhosis, 10% of that cirrhosis eventually will lead to liver cancer. Liver cancer, it's probably one of the most devastating disease you can, I don't wish this upon anyone. When looking after my father with hepatoma, that you have a swollen abdomen that you can't eat, you can't open your bowels, and then you are really suffering because you can't breathe. It is one of the most cruelest disease that can affect any humankind.
I'm sure. What about, you said your dad was a carrier, your grandmother was a carrier, George. Do you know if you're a carrier?
No, because if as a carrier, I can't practice as a surgeon.
Oh.
Yeah, so that status has to be clarified in the first place. And when my father is a carrier, if my mother is protected, and then which is, she was vaccinated, and then it definitely stopped over there at my mother's place. So all the siblings will not carry. So therefore, it is important to know the status, and then it is important to protect yourself by vaccination.
Yep, and get vaccinated if you haven't. Yeah. So is
I was just going on. Perhaps at that time during your father, the liver cancer was a bit more aggressive already. There's not much options.
Mm-hmm.
But now there are treatment for liver cancer. So you can do a transplant if it's small enough. You could do a resection, a liver resection. That means you cut off the area where the cancer is. You can do radiofrequency ablation. That means burn the area if it's small.
Yeah.
Or transarterial chemoembolization.
Yes.
So as I said, screening and diagnosing it early is important for us to see what next to do.
And I think one of the issues is not to trivialise the carrier status, because in the older generations, that it's perhaps one of the trivialization that actually makes people feel like it is just a touch of hepatitis B carrier.
It's nothing.
Correct. It's just like, people talk about a touch of diabetes. And then sometimes that really winds me up.
Borderline.
And
the good thing about the liver, it's quite an amazing organ. It regenerates.
Correct.
Yeah. So one of the very few organs. Is it the only one that regenerates? I'm still trying to figure out if brain cells regenerate. The verdict is still not quite out.
Mira, we're beyond brain cell regeneration.
Regeneration, George. Come on, we need to regenerate it. All right, okay.
But liver is one of the most forgiving
One
organs.
Of the most.
One of the most forgiving
absolutely,
organs, right?
Yes, it is. So, okay, we're discussing hepatitis. It is World Hepatitis Day this Sunday, the 28th of July. We'll come back and move on to hepatitis C. Malaysia has made groundbreaking decisions when it comes to the treatment of hepatitis C. Let's come back and have that discussion. If you have a question, give us a call, 7733 2900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899, or tweet us at BFM Radio. Good afternoon. It's our Doctor in the House series. Dr. George Lee, consultant urologist in the studio with me. Joining us also, Dr. Haniza Omar, a consultant gastroenterologist and hepatologist from Hospital Selayang. We're discussing World Hepatitis Day, which is this Sunday, the 28th of July. Screening and treatment being the focus. So we've spoken about hepatitis B. 1992 is when we introduced the National Immunization Program. Hep B was part of the vaccination immunization program. And we've done pretty well since 1992. However, there's still many of us who missed that window. People like George and I, who weren't sort of part of that.
We were just born.
National immunizing liar. George had to get immunized because of your work. However, there are many of us who are walking around not immunized.
Mm-hmm.
So go get it. As there's no treatment as such. No cure, I apologize. There is treatment, but there is no cure yet. However, the vaccine is terribly effective. How much does it look? 97%?
Yeah.
As in protection?
Yes.
Fantastic.
And, I'm sure listeners out there are interested as well, because sometimes they go for the screening, in the PATH labs or, whatever labs that they go to. And then suddenly they check for the antibodies level. Yes. How often do you have to get that checked, and how often do they get to have the boosters?
Well, so there's two schools of thoughts. So one would say that if you're living with someone with hepatitis B on board, or you're working in an area which you're exposed to blood, and so you want your levels of antibody to be above 100 at least. But they have this, they have little thing also that say that you have this memory cells in your body. Your cells have this, so that if you get infected with someone with hepatitis B, these memory cells will come and start boosting up your antibody levels high up to give you that protection as well.
I see.
Yeah. Okay. So 5 yearly.
Yeah, is that, 5 yearly sounds good.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm very curious. If 1992 the cohort was started to get immunized, is there no herd immunity yet for people like, you know, my age who weren't part of that generation who was immunized when we were born?
Nearly there.
Oh, we're nearly there. Yeah. Fantastic.
It'll be there when we're 75.
Come to the conference tomorrow, George. Okay, all right. Moving on to hepatitis C. Now, the Ministry of Health just had a free nationwide screening for hepatitis C, and it just ended last weekend. This was done between the Ministry of Health, Foundation for Innovative New Diagnostics, as well as Drugs for Neglected Diseases Initiative, DNDi. And it was probably the country's largest or biggest ever screening initiative for hepatitis C, the virus. They're supposed to be doing this on a long-term basis, right? So this weekend, it ended. I want to know whether, Dr. Haniz, are you aware of how that screening process went? Did many people come forward?
Okay, so yes, the Ministry of Health had a collaboration with the DNDi, Drug for Neglected Disease Initiative, and the test kits was provided by Unit 8, the Fine Diagnostic Test Kits. It's a rapid test. It's a screening test done in nearly 100 centres, 43 hospitals and 63 primary health care. And there was, I think, around 11,000 of test kits being used, people being screened for. So it went quite well. So we had different sites on different days for the last 1 week. And I think we're still at the verge of trying to find out, because it's been said that the prevalence for hepatitis C in our country is around 2.5%. The number seems to be quite high. And we're trying to find out where this missing thousands of people is. The theme that they use for the World Health Alliance is finding the missing millions. So we did ours in Malaysia with this hashtag.
It is not #MYMBB.
No. It's MY to Malaysia, my missing millions. So, well, we're just in the thousands range. So we are hoping to find these patients and try to link them to cure, to treatment, link to care in view of treatment and cure in, perhaps.
Mm-hmm. Okay, we'll come back to hepatitis C. We have Robert. Robert, you have a question for us.
Afternoon, Robert.
Hepatitis B and C spread.
Okay.
Can you repeat that question, Robert?
How is hepatitis B and C spread to others?
Okay.
Others. All right. Thank you very much.
Right. Okay. Great questions.
Thank you for that. So hepatitis B and C, it is transmitted when one is infected, one is exposed to someone's blood which has hepatitis B or C virus.
Okay.
All right. So if you you have a little cut here and the other person also has the same thing and he has hepatitis B or C, the chances of you getting is there.
Okay. So typically it's blood transfusion,
needle prick injury, resection, lacerations.
Sexual intercourse.
Intravenous drug abuse.
Of course, yeah.
In April, it was reported that Pakistani cricketer Shadab Khan, he had been ruled out of the series against England prior to the Cricket World Cup after being diagnosed with hepatitis C. Now, allegedly from dental treatment. Potentially, I mean, how debilitating is hepatitis C, Dr. Haniza? I mean, if he received treatment, could he have continued playing, for an example?
I would think so, yes. I think the main problem is there is ignorance. The main problem with the country is they do not know the patient, the social people, even in the health professionals, they have this stigma or they have this worry. They don't know much about hepatitis B and C.
Right.
But with hepatitis C, if you actually treat them, they can be cured. Mm-hmm. And I would think that there'll be no reason why this person should not continue the work that he's been doing or the profession that he was in before.
Okay, right. So let's talk about hepatitis C. It was a very costly drug for treatment. And now Malaysia has sort of used a voluntary license for the drug and It's now available in university and private hospitals. Have we seen much development since we introduced it? So
it was introduced back in March last year, 2018, where initially the compulsory voluntary licensing was in for the government hospitals. So it has brought down the price of this Hep C treatment, namely Sofosbuvir and Daclatasvir. And up to now, up to date, we have treated nearly 3,000 patients.
Okay.
So I think the success rate is quite high, around 95% or so. So that's quite good compared to those days of treatment with hepatitis C where you only see 60%, the most 60, 70% of success rate.
And the price has come down by what?
Half?
150,000 ringgit now, I think. Am I correct?
I think it's much more lower cheaper. Than that. It's probably 300 USD.
Per person instead of 150,000.
Yeah,
so it's not 50,000.
Right.
So, okay. I mean,
it's about 1,000 ringgit Malaysia.
Yeah, 1,000 ringgit Malaysia, to treat one person.
Yes, for 12 weeks duration.
For 12 week duration.
Yeah. Some needs 24 weeks, some needs 12.
With the with the potential tablets. Outcome of cure at the end of that course of treatment.
Correct.
Okay. I mean, I remember doing that show that, and also we had quite a few World Hepatitis Day before. And of course, early on you mentioned that the finding the missing millions, right?
Yeah.
Okay. I'm a bit surprised that we, with free treatment, we managed to only treat 3,000 patients.
Well, to start off with, when initially we start to dispense this medication, we started a very, we start in
groups.
In groups, or rather in, we start at
In different hospitals?
We draw a small number of hospitals first,
okay.
And we are working out the numbers.
In a pilot.
So you're
escalating it.
Into,
all right.
Okay,
thank
right,
you.
Okay,
okay.
Right. Okay. So eventually we
hope to see a lot more. Yeah.
Of course, you know, there perhaps is a kind of a bit of teething problems from here
true.
To there.
So I think last year was 1,003, and up to now there's another 1,007 already.
Mm-hmm.
So there's around 3,000 in total.
With a program like this, it will go up exponentially.
No, that's not true, George. The reason I'm saying is, you know, the treatment is available is that, as you said, you need to find the people who have hepatitis C.
Because last year's campaign was for people to test, you know, asymptomatic
patients.
So
this is one step further. Test it, link it to care.
Yes.
And start them on treatment.
How do we get them tested?
That's right. That is
why? There is stigma and discrimination attached to this. Dr. Haniza, you want to just go through that with us?
Again, the stigma is because of the risk factors. So generally, we would like to treat all those. We would like to test all those who have high risk behaviors or high risk where they work in these areas where they're exposed to blood. But then again, these people, maybe they're not so forthcoming in coming to get themselves tested.
Mm-hmm.
Nobody likes, I mean, they feel well as well.
Mm-hmm.
They don't like to come to hospitals and start queuing and get this.
Mm-hmm.
Them tested, and of course going further to another hospital to be treated will be another problem as well for them.
Perhaps it's the other issue about not many people actually know that it's a curable disease.
True.
Yeah, whenever in the dissemination of information and knowledge that this is a curable disease, I think a lot more people are willing to come forward.
Yeah, so for an example, risky behaviours, as you said, sex workers, people who, you know, needle, who...
alternative lifestyles.
Injecting drug users, for an example. All of them, how do you even get them tested? So, I mean, I think NGOs on the ground, I do know many of them are aggressively trying to get them to get tested, both for HIV as well as hepatitis C.
There's a few, actually, the MTAG, the Hepatitis Support Group. So I think they should go around and give awareness to people and the help. And let them know that there's no stigma. Go to hospitals and get screened, get them tested, and link them to a place where they can be treated.
What is sort of statistics that you're quoting currently? I mean, we're talking about the missing million, right?
Yeah.
Okay. I mean, if it's million, we're talking about we have 30 million Malaysians.
Yeah.
We're talking 1 in 30 Malaysians are hepatitis C positive. Is that even exaggeration?
Well, the incidence rate that our healthcare Ministry of Health 2017 showed that for hepatitis C is around 8.9 per 100,000 population, but hepatitis B is 12.7 over 100,000 population.
Right.
So those are the numbers we're trying to look for.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
But you have to bear in mind that when we do screening tests, we are just testing antibody testing.
Right.
So antibody of hepatitis C will be in the blood. May it be present infection, infection in the past, previously treated, it will still be there.
Understood.
So those patients need to have a confirmatory test, the such as the RNA or the S antigen testing.
Okay.
So speaking of antibodies, we have a question here. So, Nini is asking, I was not vaccinated because there's a test that showed I had antibodies. Is it dangerous for me now? My dad's eldest brother died of hepatitis B in the 1990s. Mm-hmm. But after all these years, am I at risk?
Okay. So Mimi has antibodies.
All right.
So was wondering that Nini is at risk of contracting hepatitis B.
Well, the fact that you have antibodies, you are protected, so you should be fine.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Okay, fantastic. Well done.
Okay. So we have Lily who's sharing her story. I just want to share my experience, she says. I was diagnosed with Hep C last 2 years ago when I was referred to GHKL, gastro. And back then I was only given the treatment, which I can't remember what it was, which was about 15,000 ringgit, if I'm not mistaken. But I was not encouraged to try it as I got told the side effects are very severe and that patients have suffered severe depression and some have died from suicide. It was only months later, through help with a family friend, I got medication, which is Sofos Buvir. And I finished 3 bottles for 3 months course, was told I'm cleared of Hep C sometime in 2017. Mm-hmm. I'm still under observation for 6 months with the gastroenterologist. It's good news that these medications will be accessible here rather than most patients were suggested to travel to India, stay there for 3 months, just get treatment, which not many can afford. So there you go. And India and Pakistan are two countries where this treatment is available extremely cheap. Yeah. Am I correct?
Yeah, I think they do lots of generics as well.
A lot of generics, yeah.
Okay. Perhaps what she was saying initially was the interferon treatment, which we were talking about in the past.
Or even before the government imposed the the treatment, offering this free of charge at that time.
At that time, yeah. Since it was only 19, last year, March.
Well done, Lily. I mean, kudos to you for actually sharing your story. And then because that will encourage many people to test, that definitely will encourage many more people to go for treatment.
3 bottles, 3 months course. Doesn't seem like there was much side effects, I think.
Yeah.
So,
but can you just clarify a little bit about Lily's, obviously when she was approaching another doctor for the treatment, was told that there's a severe side effect, on top of that, suicide intention. Can you clarify a little bit?
So I think 2 years ago, prior to that, this voluntary licensing and the presence of direct-acting antivirals, the Sofosbuvir and Daclatasvir, they were all being treated with interferon. So as I was saying, interferon is an immunomodulator. It has lots of side effects. It needs to be used with ribavirin. Mm-hmm. Patient needs to come in monthly to check up their bloods to see whether their hemoglobin drops. Mm. They'll have all that flu-like symptoms, feverish, psychiatric suicidal ideation as well in less than 3% of cases. So yes, it's what she was talking about initially.
No longer the issue.
Fantastic.
Now we are moving away from the interferon base and we are going to these oral tablets. And as I said, their success rate is very high, 95% onwards. But I think she's still being followed up with the gastro. That's good. If you have any reason to be cirrhotic and still is after treatment, then you still probably need to have lifelong follow-up.
I mean, if she asks you, am I cured like in 10 years from today? You can confidently say that, she's
probably cured from the hepatitis C, but the cirrhosis bit needs to be looked after.
There's still potential of cirrhosis.
Yeah. I mean, if she was cirrhosis to start off with, if it was a normal liver to start off, we should probably be cured.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I see. So the inflammation is what we're referring to.
Yeah, correct.
Okay. Yeah. We'll come back and find out more about World Hepatitis Day. We're discussing hepatitis B and C in particular with Dr. George Lee and Dr. Haniza Omar. If you have a question, give us a call. 7733 2900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899 or tweet us at BFM Radio. Good afternoon and welcome to the show. It's our Health and Living segments. Dr. George Lee, consultant urologist in the studio. It is our Doctor in the House series. Mm-hmm. And it is World Hepatitis Day this Sunday, the 28th of July. So joining us to shed more light on Hep B and Hep C is Dr. Haniza Omar, consultant gastroenterologist and hepatologist from Hospital Selayang. It's interesting that we introduced Hep B vaccinations in 1995 and we've done very well in terms of 1992. I apologize. And we've done very well in terms of, you know, people coming, you know, getting immunized at birth. It's interesting that our rates of hepatitis B and C in the country is, the incidence is 12.7%.
For B, yes, over 100,000 population.
Over 100,000 population and 8.9%.
For C.
For hepatitis C.
Over 8.9 per 100,000 population.
That's right,
yeah,
correct. Yeah. 8.9 and 12.7. Hepatitis B being the higher one,
yes,
still.
Correct.
So it's still a problem, isn't it? Huh?
Yes, it is.
Okay, yeah. So we really need to work on people getting vaccinated for that and getting treated.
Yeah. I mean, while we're on that issue, Sakino, just for the benefit of the listeners and the mere urologists, can you clarify about hepatitis A as well? Because everybody comes in and asks me, said, doctor, can eat clam or not, can eat the, you know, sakino klang or not, and that sort of thing. Yeah. Would you like
I
to
was just going
to
say, let me clarify B and C first.
That's right. Yeah.
B has a vaccine.
That's right.
But doesn't have a cure. C has no vaccine but has a cure.
And both of them are transmitted by blood or bodily fluid.
That's right.
Okay.
Hep A now.
That's right. The karang.
The karang. So hepatitis A, it's present in the feces of infected persons, and most often is transmitted from consumption of contaminated food or water.
Mm-hmm.
So it rarely becomes chronic.
Right. Okay.
So most of the time they have that little flu-like illness as well, a little bit of jaundice. They get better within the next 2 to 4 weeks' time. And there is vaccination for hepatitis A, yay.
So even if you get it, and then it's combined with A and B,
they
right?
are most combined and B. If you're one of those who eat out, who likes to eat all this shellfish
oysters,
the crown bit,
the
charcuterie and all, do get yourself vaccinated for A.
So vaccinated, and then you can have that raw crown.
No wonder people in food and beverage industry are vaccinated for hepatitis A, am I correct?
That's right.
Okay, Daniel Lee is asking, my wife is a hepatitis B carrier. What is the routine test that she should be requesting for to monitor her liver condition?
Mm-hmm.
All right. So the normal blood test is the liver function test, the transaminases, the AST and ALT, alanine transaminase and aspartate transaminases.
Okay. How often does Daniel's wife need to have ultrasound scan or viral serology?
All right,
or viral level.
It'd be nice if you can get going and see the doctor every 4 to 6 monthly with those blood tests. If above 40 years of age, 50 years for female and 40 for male, we would like to have an ultrasound done every 6 months
every
as well.
Every 6 months.
But if you have a family history of liver cancer, regardless of your age or regardless of the condition of the liver, we would want to have screening for liver cancer with alpha fetoprotein, which is a tumour marker, and ultrasound every 6 months, 4 to 6 monthly as well.
At what stage would you start antiviral treatment for hepatitis B for a carrier like that?
Okay, so all cirrhotics, that means they're not carriers, will need to be treated regardless of the age. For the carriers, we want to see their viral load if it's more than 2,000 international unit per litre. Or if they have persistent elevation of liver enzymes, at least 1 to 2 times upper limit of normal, and we can't exclude any other reasons, we think it's due to hepatitis B, then we probably perhaps would like to treat them.
Is there anything Daniel's wife can do to build up her own immune system to suppress the virus?
Well, they always say healthy lifestyle always helps everything.
And stay away from the karang.
Eat healthy, exercise.
Exercise, hydrate, sleep more.
Sleep more, reduce the alcohol, get vaccinated for A and, you know, those things.
Yeah. Hug if you feel like it does help. What about, you know, I had this question about from Chan, who's saying, can you contract more than one type of hepatitis? If so, does it affect treatment? And what is your ability to be cured?
Okay. So, yes, they do happen. I think hepatitis...
You can get all A, B, C.
A gets better. So, B and C.
Triple whammy.
Yeah, you can, right? Potentially.
Triple whammy will be B, C and HIV, actually.
Okay.
So, B and C, I think we see it around less than 2% of the cases. So, it all depends as well on whether they can be treated, definitely. So if they are cirrhotics, yes, you can treat the B and you can also treat the C if they're at early stage of liver cirrhosis.
I read somewhere they're now beyond C as well, right?
Yes, but the chances of getting a cure for, you're talking about Child C liver cirrhosis, are you?
I'm talking about, apart from ABC, there are
D and E, and we'll not go there.
No, George.
Well, it's interesting how, you know, the virologists are increasingly detecting more and more viruses that affect the liver that we didn't know about.
Yeah. A liver function test is sufficient, would you say, for anyone who goes and does a blood test?
Yeah, that should be fine.
Yep. Yeah. And that will be able to detect all the hepatitis?
No, that will just tell you the inflammation which is going on in your liver only.
And it's basically degree of derangement.
Okay.
It's a reflection of severity of the disease.
Then you dive into what the, you know, more
then,
tests
then
later.
You find out the viral load, presumably.
Yeah.
Okay. So tell us a little bit more about this nationwide screening for hepatitis C, which happened from the 15th to 21st of July. It was free screening. As you said, it was a simple rapid test. What came through? I mean, was this done in Hospital Selayang as well?
Yes, it was. I think every hospital was given a X number of kits to be done. So we had ours. I think we did around 270 patients. I think there was only one which was positive. So when you screen general population, not high-risk patients, the numbers are going to be small. But if you actually screen the high-risk population group, you may get a bit more number than that.
Okay. Mm-hmm. And is screening still available or ongoing?
Well, the big massive screen was done last week. But I think if you're at high risk and you are interested in get yourself tested, you can always go to the nearest clinic kesehatan, as they call it, and tell your interest that you would like to be tested. And we will try
and get
done. If
an individual choose to have it done in the kind of like private clinic, it's not that expensive, is it?
I don't think so. It varies from one place to another, I would say. I don't think it's very expensive.
Right.
For Hep C,
B or C
screening.
All, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Richard Fu is asking, is it a must to get a Hep A vaccination?
Not necessarily, no.
Yeah. Unless you are working in
food industry. Or you have a concomitant liver disease, then you might want to get your liver protected against other things as well.
Okay.
Or you don't wash your hands after scratching your bum.
George.
Because, you know, Anisa says, you know,
totally out of control. What are we doing to just ignore the man? What are we doing to reduce transmission among high-risk groups, for an example?
So,
I know we spoke about the NGOs being on the ground, but how much more can we do?
That's a difficult one, actually. But there are places which do needle exchange program, giving out free condoms, things like that to patients who have hepatitis C and probably HIV to prevent it from being transmitted.
Do you think currently hepatitis C, the mode of transmission, the more prevalent mode of transmission is IV drug users or sexual transmission?
I think the top two will be IV drug users and MSMs and stuff like that.
Right,
Okay. What are the symptoms, Dr. Haniza, for hepatitis B and C? Do they present symptoms at all?
Not really. Most of the time, they're carriers. They're asymptomatic in 80% of the cases. There may be 10% when they come in with lethargy, nausea, tired, a bit of joint pains. When you see jaundice, they can have that, but they're probably a bit too late already. And of course, the worst scenario is when they come in with complications of cirrhosis, may it be vomiting up blood or water in the abdomen, ascites, as we call it. Or they come up in this confusional state, encephalopathy, or even they come in presenting as a liver cancer. That will be probably the end stage, the extreme stages already.
I'm very curious. You know, you said the guy who, the one, you know, his birthday was on 28th of July. What's his name again?
Professor Baruch Bloomberg.
Thank
the founder
you.
Of hepatitis B virus.
That's right.
In 1965 in Australia.
Not the Bloomberg TV.
I just have such a bad memory. I always expected him to have a surname that's something hepatitis.
Actually, she was testing you.
Oh, yes.
It was a medical student exam.
Yeah.
You pass. It's okay. Don't worry.
Where did this virus come from? Do we know?
Oh dear, that's a little bit.
Okay. You failed now. You passed with the blue book question. Now you failed with
Wills.
I think
it was found in Australia. One of these aborigines and one part of Australia, which I can't remember where it was.
Oh. Okay, I'm always curious.
He was doing a study. He was doing some research in his lab, and he went out taking up bloods, and he found this virus. It's a DNA virus.
Yeah, it's a DNA virus.
What's a DNA virus?
Basically, there are two types, and some viruses are RNA, some are DNA. So, okay. Yeah.
That's not answering my
question. That's okay. I failed a long time ago, so it's okay. It's just that is how the genetic code for that particular virus is a type of virus that we call it. Yeah. That's
right. Still not answering my question.
We're still not answering questions, so I never passed anyway. So at least you passed one question. She's very tough.
I'm just curious. Yeah. I always love to understand
viruses
because they're such rascals, you know. And then I was like, where did they come from?
Some people.
We know now a lot of it has to do with deforestation and a whole load of development. And where is it coming from?
That say they're even found in some areas in China or Australia. Actually, they're found somewhere. How it got started, I'm sorry.
The other question related to how it got started is that I always wonder why is it so much more prevalent as carrier-wise in Asia-Pacific regions? You know, because comparatively to Europeans and also the, North Americans and South Americans, Asia-Pacific has a much higher prevalent rates of hepatitis B carriers. Is that not true?
Yes, it's true. Yes, correct.
Well, why? Is that? Do you think it started from Australia and then kind of like stays around here? Nobody knows,
it's
right?
This area.
Oh, is it because genetic susceptibility amongst the Asia Pacific regions? It's difficult to answer that question.
It's difficult to answer that,
Okay, we'll spare you. Question from Rebecca. Rebecca's asking, I used to work in the F&B industries and we were required to immunize for typhoid, yes? Yeah. Is it the same as Hep A? Also, how long does it last?
Great question, yeah.
Yeah, that's good. I would think it would last around 2 to 3 years,
Hepatitis and then just repeat the vaccine.
Yeah.
Okay. Next question. I would like to know if, first of all, has immunity to Hep B, does that mean that one is also immune to Hep C? And where can one do thorough screening for Hep C? How much does an immunization for Hep C cost? I can answer the third one.
Yeah.
There is no vaccine for Hep C. But the first one, when you have immunity, does that mean you are also immune to Hep C?
No, the vaccination for B is just for B alone, just like A is just for A alone.
Yeah.
So, and where do you do screening for Hep C?
Well, as I said, you can do it in any labs that provide this Hep C screening.
Any clinics.
Or any clinics, for that matter. Yeah.
Okay. Question from Daniel. Why is MSM at higher risk? I'm just curious. What's MSM? Yeah.
Men having sex with men.
Men. Okay, fair enough. Okay.
And presumably any sexual contact. It's not necessarily just that. All right, it's just any sexual contact actually is high risk.
Okay. Olivia Oreta Herrera is asking, does this mean that if you have a tattoo, you need to get yourselves checked frequently?
Tattoo, is that transmissible?
Well, if it's done in areas, in places where it's probably hygiene was not
priority.
So yes, because in tattoos, although it's subcutaneous tissue involved,
it's
still at risk of transmission.
Yeah.
So you can have it checked if you want, but if you don't have the risk anymore, if you're not going for yearly new tattoos, and I suppose it's fine.
Okay, so just once will be fine after you've done it. Okay, so we've had a pretty interesting discussion today. I just don't know. I didn't get the answer as to where this virus came from, but that's
we'll
all right.
Next year.
It's okay.
I'll bring you back. I have one question. This is just a final question. Second, I know Sly Young is in the forefront for hepatic surgery, right? Okay.
Yes.
You guys are doing great work. And
thank you.
You're the tertiary and quaternary service for the whole country, really. It's the forefront of everything. Is there any new research that you guys are doing that you'd like to share with listeners? And if listeners out there who really want to help with hepatitis awareness and also campaigns, how can they get in touch?
All right. So I think the research in Sly Young Hospital, any hospitals for that, are mainly in hepatitis C. But I think in the years to come, next year or so, we're trying to do hepatitis B, looking for cure for hepatitis B. Mm-hmm. It's what we were mentioning earlier. We also have some fatty liver studies been going on as well.
Mm-hmm.
So that will be a few things that we'll look at in Sly Young or the centres that have liver research units as well.
And general public and people who want to help? How do they get in touch with you guys?
Well, they can look us up in the hospitals website. Or in the website and see what's going on, because every centre would have their own website and what other research is going on and how to contact us in the clinics.
Yeah, because many, I'm sure, the cured hepatitis C sufferers will subsequently help you guys to push forward the frontier.
Absolutely. So just get yourself tested, I suppose. That's really, you know, sometimes you're afraid, you feel ignorance is bliss.
But this is a curable disease.
Yes, but still, you know, George.
It's a target in 2030 to eliminate B and C.
Oh, right.
Yeah. Because I don't want to ask you when you did your last blood test. Like when you were five, maybe? Okay. Thank you both. Would you have a message for us this World Hepatitis Day?
All right. To all the listeners out there, get yourself screened and tested for viral hepatitis B and C. Stay fit and healthy and do regular exercise and eat healthy food.
Mm-hmm. I think, you know, it's rare that in medicine we have a curable viral disease. This is the one. Get yourself tested and get yourself cured.
Fantastic. Thank you both very much for joining me today. Dr. George Lee, consultant urologist, and Dr. Haniza Omar, consultant gastroenterologist and hepatologist from Hospital Selayang, this World Hepatitis Day on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.